Welcome to the Church Multiplication Collective podcast. Podcast designed to help you multiply like never before. I'm your host, Ed Love, and I oversee the Church Multiplication Collective, which is an intentional community of Wesleyan leaders committed to discovering, developing, and deploying workers for the Lord's harvest. I'm excited today. Got my good friend here, Spencer Lohman, who is going to share with us here on this podcast today about what is going on in his wild world of church planting. Spencer is just now in the pre-launch phase of launching United City Church, and he's based out of Greensboro, North Carolina.
The North CAC.
Yeah. And he's in the early stage, but it's just a really unique story. I thought it'd be really fun just to share what God is up to there and how really the Lord's brought him and his wife to this point where they're launching this new work with a new focus in this community, and just really excited about this. So welcome, Spencer.
Good to be here, man. Thanks for having me. Excited about this.
Yeah. Well, why don't you just give us a little bit of your storyline here, and let's just dive right in.
Sure. Yeah. So to start, for me, I grew up in a church planting household. When I was 6 years old, my dad got a call to ministry, man, to church planting specifically, and basically moved our family to the coast of North Carolina, to Wilmington, when church planting was like kind of unheard of, man. In fact, he didn't even go to like an assessment for the Wesleyan Church. It was a Nazarene assessment back in the day that I think we were tapping into. And so for me, man, early on, all I know as far as the local church is concerned is church planting, is multiplication, is pioneering into kind of the frontier. And so I remember being like 6 and 7 years old, dude, putting door hangers on doors, inviting people to a Bible study that was based off the Andy Griffith Show. If that's not the most and best way to start a church, man, I don't know what is. So from that point on, man, I just remember like grinding. I remember the idea of if the church is going to grow, it takes harvesters to work. And so at age 12 and 13, 14, 15, you know, for me, it wasn't, I was just consuming the church. I was having to actually serve and take part. And so, make a long story short, God ended up giving me a call to ministry, and began to kind of work out that calling even more, the older I got, specifically for the urban context and for the city. I started getting kind of intrigued just towards diversity and towards the idea of the city center, man. You have the rich and the poor that share the same sidewalk. And I ended up going to Indiana Wesleyan for college. And while I was there, man, I got a chance to get around some great church planters. We had a church planting organization on campus called Launch, which really fostered kind of this calling in my life that God was birthing at the time. And what's cool out of that is that about, 5 years, you know, away from that, we now have 4 church planters that have come out of that church organization.
Really?
A church planting organization on campus, which is awesome.
Yeah.
Various parts of the country. And so, you know, when I was in college, started getting a heartbeat for planting, and was talking to my girlfriend at the time, who I knew was getting ready to be my wife. And we kind of thought, like, this doesn't make sense. Like, we're not in the right season of life that we're supposed to be in to be having this kind of calling.
Yeah.
We just started dreaming together. And we started really just looking at cities in the southeastern part of the U.S. I really felt like God was kind of designing me for a specific type of city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think oftentimes we maybe negate the reality that we're all, I think, designed to thrive in a certain type of context, in a certain type of city. And so for me, I started looking at cities between like 100,000 and 400,000 people in the southeastern U.S. Cities like Savannah, Georgia, Charleston, South Carolina, And man, I was praying that the God would send me to one of those two cities.
Really?
They're awesome, you know? And Wilmington was on there, which is my home. That made the most sense. Durham, North Carolina, Winston-Salem, Asheville, and even Chattanooga, Tennessee. And we just began praying about that. And for 30 days, we just were just really going hard at this and never got any clarity, man. We went to go check out these cities, went to go visit them, never got any kind of direction. So we were a little bit frustrated, man. We're like, God, you know, we're submitting ourselves to your direction, but you got to kind of let us know where you want us to go. And on our way back from Asheville, we were driving back to Jordan's hometown, which is Reidsville, a little small community outside of Greensboro. And we just decided for whatever reason to veer off of Interstate 40 and drive into the urban core of Greensboro. And the way we kind of did that strategically was we took a house that we found that we thought was cool on Zillow, which is like the house real estate app. And we mapped it with our GPS and went and found it. And it happened to be in this urban neighborhood in Greensboro called Lindley Park, which bumps up to one of the major universities in the city. And God just began to kind of speak to me about the souls of the people I was seeing, man. I had that kind of out-of-body experience where I started to really begin to see the souls of people. I didn't see the city for just the aesthetic. I saw the city for what it was made up of, which was the people. And being in that neighborhood, man, I saw rich, I saw poor, I saw black, I saw white, I saw academics, I saw creatives. I was like, you know, this is the culture of the city. Like this is the bloodline, this is the vein. And so on our way back to Reidsville, Jordan looked at me and she said, "What do you think about Greensboro?" And I said, "I think this is what we need to start praying about." Mm. But the crazy part about that is that Greensboro is weird, man. It's like the redheaded stepchild in North Carolina. You know, like every state, I think, kind of has like that larger city that's kind of the redheaded stepchild. And in North Carolina, you know, everyone's flocking to Charlotte. Everyone's flocking to Raleigh. But then there's this really awkward city called Greensboro. And early on, it was like, man, I'm not going to go there, man. There's no way. But God began to like speak to me that I was designed for these type of cities. And I think he's given me even greater vision for cities like this all across the country. But we prayed, man, for 30 days. And at the end of those 30 days, we were having a conversation with Matt LaRoy. And I was like, dude, I said, like, you know us better than anybody. Where out of these cities do you see us really, you know, thriving in? And he said, I'll be honest, man, all these cities are great, but the one place I see you guys thriving the most is in Greensboro. And I was like, man, if that's not the voice of God, man, I don't know what is. So being the good Christian that I am, I was obedient to that. And we just began pursuing that calling, man. We approached the district with a vision to plant a church or plant a community called United City. And they got behind it. They were supportive of it and went to assessment. And then we got married last June and moved into downtown Greensboro and lived in downtown for the last right at almost a year. And have just recently bought a house in the Midtown area of Greensboro. And yeah, man, it's a city of about 300,000 people in the city, about 750,000 people in the greater Greensboro area. Got 50,000 plus college students here. Got some really unique schools, man. We got a Quaker school. We got the largest historically black college and university in the nation. We got a United Methodist school, and we got a large state school in UNCG. And then we have an all-black girls' school called Bennett College. So it's a really, like, weird dichotomy of all these different students and the future leaders of tomorrow that are here now. And so, you know, it's a cool place also in that it was a birthplace for the civil rights movement. The very first sit-in that ever took place happened here in the early 60s.
Really?
And we're four North Carolina A&T students. Wow. stood up for their rights and sat in on a all white drugstore and little restaurant called Woolworths. And so, you know, a lot of cool stuff like that that people don't realize about the city. The day that Dr. King was assassinated, he was actually scheduled to speak at an AME church here in the city. So just a lot of unique aspects and layers of the city that really, I think, was a huge part of the calling that God had on our lives. And yeah, man, we started having vision nights, interest meetings back in the fall, just kind of, you know, just kind of incarnated into the community, had those at a coffee shop downtown. We called them vision nights, had one once a month. Our first one, man, we didn't think anybody was going to come. We thought maybe it'd be like 10 or 15 people. And we had 40 people that came to hang out with us, man, at our first one, which was fantastic. And we had between 40 and 50, man, new people who began coming each time we did those. And, yeah, we started meeting just kind of organically and in a just kind of a stripped-down worship setting twice a month, starting in January, and we started having city groups meet in different parts of the city. It's cool, man. We have a diverse community of all walks of life, all ethnicities. We have, you know, people from different religious backgrounds and socioeconomic backgrounds. It's a really cool community. And so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the background to who we are and kind of what we're doing here in the city.
You know what I love about your storyline is that it all began with your dad, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You were
Andy Griffin.
Youngster. So you were about 13 when you're in that church plant, right?
Actually, I was six.
Oh, you're six.
Yeah, 1999, man, is when my family started playing.
Not even going to ask you how old you are.
Yeah, please don't do that. I just started shaving a couple days ago.
That beard's looking nice. That's just unique, though, I think, that you had those seeds, those apostolic seeds planted in you when you were so young, and you saw that happen, and you, in a sense, kind of follow in your father's footsteps in a way, which is neat. And, you know, it's I think about my kids and what they're going to grow up to be. You know, they're 11, 10, and 6. And you just have those pictures of your children. You want them to get it, you know. You just always, you want them to get Jesus. You want them to get the church and love it and be a worker for the harvest, you know. Yeah. And I think that's just a neat picture, and just celebrate how God's worked in your life. That's for sure. Pretty and, cool. You know, you've got a very unique persona. I imagine the ministry that's flowing out of you is unique. Maybe even you might even say this is just homegrown. What does it look like to you as it's beginning to develop and it's beginning to take shape? What is that God dream in your heart? What does it really look like?
Yeah, man. You know, I just, well, Jordan and I both, we began praying when we first came into the city, dude, that United City would not be the end, right? Like, we wanted to be able to be a part of something much larger than ourselves. We have such a unique heart and such a passion for cities like Greensboro. You know, the, like I mentioned earlier, the awkward large cities that are growing, but people aren't necessarily talking about those as much. You know, the Columbia, South Carolinas of the world, the Greenvilles, the Jackson, Mississippi's, the Cincinnati, Ohio, the Toledo's, the El Paso, Texas, the Plano's, the Richmond's. Like, there are cities all across the country that have a similar kind of feel to Greensboro. And so our dream, man, and our heart is to be able to hopefully spark a larger conversation in cities like Greensboro, specifically even cities that have such a college influence. The Madison, Wisconsin's of the world, you know, the Bloomington, Indiana's of the world. Like those cities have the future leaders of tomorrow. And so for us, man, our community is nothing flashy. Like it's not sexy and hip and cool. It's just like, I think it's just a reflection of who we are. Like we meet right now in an old Moravian church fellowship hall. You know, we have wooden chairs, wooden floors. We have a fireplace in the fellowship hall. Like it is not fancy. We don't even have speakers right now. We just worship with acoustic music. And it's amazing, man. We have people come to us all the time and just say how rich it is. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're trying to be, man. We're just trying to be authentically ourselves. We're trying to embrace five core values in all that we do. If we're a church of 2,000, if we're a church of 50, like I want us to embody these five core values in our community. And so really our heartbeat, man, is that by year three as a community, we're beginning to talk about the next city on our heart, you know, and the next place where God is going to allow us the opportunity to speak life into something. And the cool part about our story, man, is that we dreamed about a multiple cities intentionally at the time. But what's cool is that now God has placed already three church planters.
Wow.
In three cities that we prayed about that God didn't send us to. But because of that, he's now sent other individuals.
Mm.
Church. So that's the dream, man, is to dream. Like the dream is for us to begin to actually understand what it means to like get a whiteboard in our mind and begin to draw and to doodle and to create, like think about what it means to see that movement take place. So
yeah,
you know, that's kind of the dream for us, man, is that we would have an opportunity to impact culture, not just build a organism, you know, like we want to be in a posture that we as a community are impacting culture.
Yeah. Love it. Absolutely love it. That's where the church should be. And in fact, oftentimes you see the church, you know, we're always reacting to the culture or trying to, you know, mimic it instead of being the creator of it. And so that's, I love that, man. It's so neat to see. And some of that, you know, I wonder, I mean, you're in the millennial generation category, you know.
Have grace on me, please.
What's that?
Have grace on me if you can.
Hey, man, I'm like right on the line, like depending on who you talk to. I might even be a millennial myself.
We'll accept you, man. We accept everybody.
Yeah. But I wish I was a builder. You know what? Like those are just cool people, you know, builders. That whole atmosphere though that you're creating, you know, seems to align with the millennial values, right? Yeah. What are you seeing with that? Like just how you're posturing yourself now to reach those, you know, like yourself in the millennial generation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that our culture tends to see, and I think the church tends to see millennials a few different ways, right? I think we see them as lazy, entitled, narcissistic. And I think in reality, I think most millennials are just bored. they are like the ADHD kid in third grade.
Yeah.
You know, like they have a hard time sitting still. And so our heartbeat is saying, okay, let's actually foster the natural kind of habitat that a millennial likes to operate in, you know?
Yep.
So a millennial is philanthropic. You know, they want to give back. They want to make an impact.
Yep.
Millennials are incredibly creative. You know, they love ideas. They love innovation. They love to dream. And they're also incredibly inclusive, right? Like they don't want to have anybody feel left out. And so in our attempt to kind of inject the gospel into that, you know, we want to be able to create millennials on mission who can naturally operate out of who they are. And because of that, a movement can happen because we're fostering their own natural kind of characteristics. And so I really would say, man, this is an opinion, but this is what I think. I would say that millennials are naturally apostolic.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think if you just look at the facts and the percentages, I think it just speaks to the apostolic heart. And just looking at some of my research, man, 69% of millennials crave adventure.
Yeah.
And if that's not apostolic, right? I don't know what it is, man. You know, 88% prefer collaboration over competition. So they want to we want to work together. So I mean, it's just really fostering an atmosphere that allows millennials in their natural kind of everyday rhythms to be able to be on mission. It's being able to look at the nurse or the teacher or the student or the entrepreneur and say, where you're at, like where you are right now is where you've been sent.
Mm.
And so it's using that language that empowers a millennial to live on mission, making disciples where they are.
Yep.
Right now.
Yep. Love it. And, you know, it's fascinating just to think about, you know, when you have to take a step back sometimes and just, you know, look and see at the different movements that have taken place throughout history, you know,
Yeah. And
the way that God designed certain things to happen and develop. And we've been, you know, having this conversation, even in the Wesleyan Church, you know, I mean, it's a broader church conversation, but, we've been having this conversation around apostolic multipliers.
Yeah.
And trying to reimagine what that looks like to see the apostles awaken, arise. You know, sometimes just identifying who they are and what those characteristics are in people and maybe, just maybe, you know, God's got a whole generation of apostles who are being developed right now, being raised up, and are ready, you know, to take off for this new generation, call it a third great awakening, you know? I mean, it's just like maybe God is priming the world and through the emerging generations who some people have written off. But isn't that the way the gospel works, though, you know?
It's all countercultural, man. It's not supposed to make sense, you know?
Love it. So
crazy, yeah.
And I think we need, you know, voices like yourself who are some – I mean, you're on the front end of it, leading the way, and just being an example. I just really appreciate you being an example for emerging generations and just saying, you know what? We don't know what it all looks like, but we're willing to step out in faith.
Yeah.
We're going to create, and we're going to go for it. And I have this deep respect for you. Just want to let you know that, too, by the way, and what you're doing.
It's the mustache. I know. It's got it.
not the mustache. Sorry, buddy.
I thought that's what it was. No, I appreciate that, man. That's really encouraging, because being, you know, 24 and in this position, man, like every day I wake up and I feel like that's the one area the enemy just attacks greatly.
Yeah.
You know, and it's also, I think, a pro in that I can like navigate that millennial conversation, because I am one. Like, I know what I struggle with, and I'm not saying I represent 75 million people, but I think I do have a little bit of knowledge as to kind of the way we move and the way we kind of interact in our everyday life as millennials.
Yeah, exactly. So what would you say, someone listening here today, what's your final little word of wisdom to someone who's maybe sitting there wondering, could God use me to plant a church? What would you say to them?
Man, I would say the one thing that really shifted Jordan and I's kind of posture when it came to ministry is that we began praying for cities versus praying for the right position, or, you know, or the right type of ministry even. Like my prayer for whoever's listening, if you are wrestling with church planting, I would just say begin to jot down 3 to 5 cities that give you somewhat of a sense of intrigue. Mm. I think also do a self-examination of your gifts and look at how you've been designed and created. Because I think there's a, you know, we make fun of those Facebook quizzes that like tell you what city you yeah. fit best in.
Yeah.
But I think those are like, as cheesy as they are, the concept is brilliant, man. Like if we could figure out a process to be able to foster people's natural gifts and strengths and place them with a location in mind, like that would revolutionize movement. And so I think for anybody who is wrestling with that, pray about a couple of cities, look at a couple cities, figure out those values and start now. Like the beautiful thing about Jesus is he's already said, go. So, you know, Dahati Lewis says, where you are is where you've been sent. Mm-hmm. And I think that embodies movement and that embodies gospel saturation. And we need more people, frankly, in places like Greensboro.
Yeah.
You know, we need laborers in cities like Greensboro, because cities like Greensboro and cities alike are the ones pioneering the future of ideals and paradigm and thought. So, you know, Tim Keller talks about all the time that the city center is the hub of change in the world. Yep. So we got to have disciples, whether you're a teacher, a social worker, a designer, a business leader, we need you in those hubs to be able to help inject the gospel as the city is making an impact on the world around us.
Yeah. Love it, man. Love it. Well, Spencer, thanks so much for being with us today.
Absolutely.
And we just celebrate what God's doing in you and proud of you. And let's keep more millennials on mission.
Yeah. Well, Ed, I appreciate you, man, and what you're doing and creating this conversation in the denomination. And really, you know, again, with Dr. Schmidt's leadership, man, there's no better time to be a Wesleyan. And really excited about what's happening. And, you know, we just want to be a part of that conversation. Yeah.
No better time to be a Wesleyan.
Yeah, you can preach that.
Good word to wrap up on. Hey, you've been listening to the Church Multiplication Collective podcast. Thanks for joining us today. As always, our podcast is being brought to you by our good friends at Global Partners, who are leading the way for the global focus in the Wesleyan Church. You can find out more about the Global Partners at globalpartnersonline.org. Signing off. We'll see you next time. Peace.